720 WGN. It is WGN Nightside. Daniel here with you until 1 a.m. And we talked with Patty and Andrea. We've got an eclectic blend of a lot of different things. We're going to talk a little food. We're going to talk a little movies. We're going to talk a little Stan Lee. We're going to talk some Hollywood special effects. And we're going to talk with, as we often do, some barbecue and build that into the travel side. So the barbecue here in Chicago that is known, loved, and enjoyed is also going to be enjoyed around the world. And Phil Wingo is one of those guys that's helping bring that message as an ambassador of the barbecue world. So he'll be with us along with Phil Graff is here as well. And coming up a little bit later, we are going to have Eileen Ogan. She is a nationally syndicated travel personality, right? So takingthekids.com. She'll be on with us, Brian Nugent, as well. But right now, this is a place where I was right before I got here. She is on the line. It is one of, I think, the creative and driving forces for all the fun and food at Ely, Dalton Terpstra. Dalton, welcome to WGN.
Hi, Dane. Thanks.
Well, I was just...
Long time no see.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long. But I was there along with a lot of people that were really enjoying what it is. And for those people that don't know, Eataly is 60,000+ square feet of action-packed food. So much, there's a lot of education there, so many products, demos, everything from meat, fish, bread. You do it all on site. There's multiple restaurants there. And you do a lot of fun stuff, too. You've got this chef collaboration, right, where you bring in some notable people in the food world, right? You get them together with Chef Will, and you come up with something that is very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been doing a series called Quattromani, which means four hands in Italian. So four hands meaning two from our guest chef and two from our executive chef, Will Serafini. And we do these events, you know, we've done them weekly, we've done them biweekly. Right now we're in a series where we have them on the second and fourth Tuesday of every month. And yeah, we bring in somebody great. Tonight it was Penny Pollack, of course, the legendary food critic from Chicago Magazine, and she came in and made her wonderful mother's recipe of spaghetti. So it was a very classic Italian-American dish of delicious spaghetti with meat sauce.
Yeah, well, anytime your business card says legend, you know, on it, then you know you're doing something right. Well, here's the thing, too. So you got together, and this is a series. So Penny Pollack, obviously, you know her as the longtime dining editor for Chicago Magazine and, of course, the podcast Dining Out Loud that she does with Mike Neggert. They do such a great job. So it was very cool to have her in there. And you guys have personalities in all the time for the chef series. And so what else is going on? I know you've got some other ones coming up, right? Who else do you have, and what are they going to be making? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so on Tuesday, the 27th of this month, we're going to have Matt Roan. He's a DJ here in Chicago, but he's also on the board of the Chicago Children's Choir. So he'll be in the restaurant DJing and making pizza all together in one night on the 27th from 6 to 9 o'clock. And that's all happening upstairs in La Pizza and La Pasta, which is our flagship restaurant in our Chicago location. Of course, we have multiple restaurants, but La Pizza and La Pasta is definitely a great place to start if you're looking for pizza and pasta. And then we also have some events coming up on the 11th and the 18th of December, so right before the holidays. We'll have Ari Bendersky, who's also a journalist, and his husband coming in to make some pasta. And then we have the girls from Presence Agency coming in as well to make pizza and host a Amaro cocktail talk in the space.
Even if you're a regular, you know, person, it's not just a grocery store. Some people think, hey, it's a store. It's got a lot of stuff. Certainly, you do sell a lot of products. And so that does happen. You have the La Escuela for the education side, so you can learn how to, you know, make cheese, make pizza, pairings with the wine and all that kind of stuff. But also, and we know because Lydia Bastianich typically comes in with, we talk about that. I know the last couple of years we have done that when it comes to truffle season, right? And if you ever wanted to, you see them in pictures, people share it on Instagram all the time. Wow, here's, you know, a truffle as big as, you know, a little kid's head. And this is an opportunity not only to see one in a museum setting behind some very thick plexiglass, but to actually enjoy it, right? And make some tough decisions on how much you want on your plate, right? You've got that coming up with the truffles.
Yeah, funny you should mention truffles. We are opening our truffle restaurant for the fourth year in a row. Il Tartufo will be opening up this Thursday, the 15th. So we open Thursday through Sunday for the rest of the holiday season, so all the way through the end of December. And we'll be shaving truffles on just about anything. At Il Tartufo, and actually this year it's called Il Tartufo e Il Vino, which means the truffle and wine. So it's all about enjoying truffles and, you know, all the different ways you can enjoy it, whether that's alongside a dollar egg on the menu. So, you know, one of the most simplistic ways to enjoy the fresh truffles is with a super simple, high-quality ingredient like eggs. But you can also get a tasting menu and have truffles shaved on all of the courses. You can have a truffle for the table if you want to bring your friends and, you know, splurge a little bit. So all of those options are going to give you great prices on truffles, a great experience in the city. And this year, we kind of transformed the space into a Narnia of sorts, very forest-inspired. So I know people are excited to see the restaurant, but this year we've taken a little spin on the decor to give it a little bit more vibe and atmosphere and space.
Did you say Narnia? You know, like the you know.
It really does have a Narnia feel. Yeah, you walk in and you're under these beautiful branches and Edison light bulbs, and you get to eat truffles and pasta. It's going to be a very, very cool experience.
You guys are always doing. Here's the thing: there's so much in there that you feel like you don't even really need to try, right? So much for the eyes, and, and certainly, you know, for the palate and on the food side. But you guys are always coming up with really cool events, personalities, ways to keep it fresh. And I know it's a lot of work, and we all appreciate all the stuff that you guys do. And for Penny's thing, we got a chance to talk with her a little bit. We're going to have that at diningoutloud.com for the website for that too, and it's going to be up here at WGNRadio.com along with the links for the truffle restaurant and a lot of the other stuff going on. So before we let you go, for Eataly, people want to find out when those events are going on and when they can get out there and see and do some of the things we talked about. What's the website?
You can go to Eataly.com/Chicago.
All right. Thanks, Dalton. You did great. And we will see you soon. We will talk to you soon. And thanks for jumping on the show today.
Great. Thanks, Dane.
All right, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, he is in studio, Phil Wingo. You know him from Pork Mafia. We're going to talk a little bit about barbecue-related tourism. It sounds great, right? You want to get out there. You don't want to necessarily just go see an amusement park, maybe some ruins, sit on a beach. You could do all those things. You add barbecue to it. Boy, you've got yourself a vacation. He is there with the spices and the rubs and the travel. We're going to talk with him when we come back. It's Nightside here on WGN 720. WGN, it is WGN Nightside. Dane here until 1 a.m. And we are talking, some travel, right? But not only travel, but also a little bit of food. You could travel to Eataly over there off of Ohio, and so many different things happening there. And now you get to do some travel with one of the best, foods in the world, right? It's one of the best things out there for a million different reasons. I think the primordial nature where man and fire, and it's been around since the caveman days, and people love it. I don't care where you go around the world. Certainly here in Chicago, it is big. In studio with us, we've got Phil Wingo from Pork Mafia. Phil, welcome to WGN.
Thank you.
Oh, pull the microphone close. Get it maybe like 3 inches away from there. Yep.
Thank you.
So we think about Chicago, you know, when it comes into the kind of some of those barbecue conversation, I think just as Chicago over the last maybe, you know, 6-7 years has really kind of found their national voice as far as the rest of the country kind of saying, wow, you know, that's a great food town, as opposed to just New York or San Francisco or New Orleans or something like that. We've got the James Beard Awards here. We've got a lot of great chefs. We're attracting a lot of things. But when it comes to that barbecue conversation, you know, people talk about, you know, you talk about your Kansas City and your Texas and your Carolinas and certainly a lot of things happening around the country. But I don't know that Chicago gets enough credit for the kind of barbecue that we're making here, the talent that we have here. But there's some of the best barbecue in the country is happening right here.
Absolutely there is. If you go to the south side, you got the old school places, you get some new places popping up, but there's great food here for sure.
So I know that we got a chance. I see you all the time. You know, we see each other at a bunch of different events, whether it's like the Cochon events, the Heritage Breed Pork Tour that comes and ends up here in the Chicago area, or Windy City Smokeout. And that is one of the things that it's an event that's only been about 5 years or so and gone from, and I was in on some of those initial conversations with the lettuce folks and Doug Saltis and Bub City, and as they were kind of deciding, hey, let's do this. The first one was at a parking lot that wasn't too far from Tribune Tower, and it seemed big when it was empty. When you filled it up, it was really a small venue, and now they're, you know, they're at Grand and the River. And it seemed like, wow, this is a huge space. How are you going to fill this up? And you know what? They've done it. They've done it to the point where it's basically sold out. It's enormous. Now, Phil, are you surprised at how quickly, right? It's grown into one of the premier events.
Very big. I've been at each one of them, except for one of them. I think I was out of the country, but, I happen to help Pappy's when they come in. Pappy's from St. Louis for the event. And it's just grown. I mean, it's probably near half 500,000 people.
It's huge. They'll say, you know, here's the kind of things. They'll say it's a country music festival that also has barbecue and it's big. And obviously the pig is on the logo, but he's got a guitar. I'm always gone when the music starts. Nothing against. They've got some great talent. And I know that they get lots of accolades for the talent. There's certainly, you know, tens of thousands of fans who come there really strictly or more, at least importantly, for the music. I'm there, obviously, for the barbecue side. I'm already gone by the time that happens. But, yeah, it is an event that has gotten, you know, more and more popular. And so, and I think it's a testament, too, not only that you can get people from the Chicago area and surrounding area to show up to enjoy great barbecue, but really, Phil, and you can speak to this, you mentioned Pappy's. You're bringing in the team photo, some of the greatest and most revered pit masters from around the country. They love coming here.
Yeah, and because that's a well-run event, and it's great to be able to go to one specific place and be able to try several different barbecues. Somebody from Arizona was here, guys from New York. I mean, it was just a lot of different talent, and it's the top talent.
It really is, because you've got places like Salt Lick, you've got Ubon's, Fox Brothers, you know, Martin's. It reminds me of, and I don't know if you've been to Disney before or anything like that, it reminds me kind of like Epcot Center, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Where you get a chance to go to, like, oh, you can do a world tour right there, you know, in one place. And on the barbecue side, you can almost do a national tour of great places, you know, right there at Windy City Smoker. Well, you brought up Pappy's. You mentioned helping them out. I know. And for the listeners, I mentioned Fox Brothers out of Atlanta. That's where I think you and I actually physically saw each other the last time we were there for Windy City Smokeout. You are as hooked up and hooked in to the barbecue scene as absolutely anybody. And we were kind of, I guess you'd call it the equivalent of barbecue, like backstage, right? We were behind all the stuff where some of, I don't want to say this because, you know, people are going to be like, geez, I got to get back there. But there is some of the great fried chicken.
Absolutely.
Right? Some amazing stuff happens. There's some good cookies, too, some chocolate chip cookies. But you mentioned helping Pappy. So let's talk a little bit about Pork Mafia. Other than just being, as so many of our listeners are, fans of great barbecue, and certainly we are all that, but you work directly with them. Talk about what you do with the spices and the rubs and how you're helping them be as great as they can be.
So my main business is I manufacture spice blends for restaurants. Several here in Chicago area, New York, all over the country. Even as I've traveled across to Europe, I even got selling products there, spice blends. But helping restaurants develop their own or using mine is my main business.
Now, that seems a little mysterious, right? That's kind of a sort of a mad scientist meets a chef meets, right?
You know, right.
There's not a lot of, I don't know, are there a lot of rules for this? How did you get into, were you a kid somewhere? You kind of blend some things together and
I happen to have a partner at one point who got me into the R&D side of it. And I work with a couple factories, one for dry blends and one for wet blends. And the wet blends is Legacy Foods for all my sauces that I get done. And they are like family. These two factories are like families with me. So I can go there and I work closely with them and help develop something for the restaurants.
So what is it that people are looking for? Do people come to you? Certainly. And a lot of it's kind of, I don't know if it's proprietary, but on the barbecue side, you know, people are pretty specific about what it is that they do. Some of the places that you work with and help have a great following. Do they know what they want? And they're like, Phil, help us make more of this. Or are you coming in and saying, well, here's a way to tweak it. Here's something that I've seen done, you know, in other places. Do you guys collaborate on what it's going
to
be like?
We do collaborate on that. And sometimes a specific restaurant will just ask me to help them with one specific item, such as a brisket or with their pulled pork or something. But I have no problem helping them get that to where they want it and to reach the flavors they need. I got the labs at both factories that can help me develop that recipe for the restaurant.
Now, a little bit about the industry in general. Growing up You know, you got your McCormick spices, and all you needed was one. You didn't have to have a million different ones with crazy pictures on them. Or maybe the, you know, got a chance to interview him a couple times, Paul Prudhomme, right? You know, the magic seasonings, you know.
He Everybody's used all that stuff.
And so those were like, but that's really all you needed in the whole world. And now you come to a point where not only are the restaurants looking to do it, but there's so many people out there that try great stuff at the restaurants.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that, that I love, and I know you love, and people appreciate about barbecue, is that everybody can kind of get in and kind of dabble in it. You don't go to Alinea and then, you know, you're making your own kind of chocolate bubble that blows out gas, or you usually don't do that, right? Barbecue is kind of where you feel like you can get in there and participate with it. It's a huge part. It's an industry now, right?
Correct.
The spices.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I love going from place to place and helping them develop that, because everybody's got their own flavor they're looking for. So it's endless what we can do for places.
Phil Wingo is from Pork Mafia. He's going to be with us for probably the remainder of the program. We're going to talk with him not only about the stuff that he does, but the places that he takes it, the travel. Phil Graff is here as well. We'll talk with him a little bit later on in the show as well. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to send it to news. Stay tuned. It's Nightside here with Dane on WGN 720. And the great bumper music by Casera. Great job, Casera. 720 WGN. It is Daniel here for Nightside. And on the line with us, we're kind of taking a world tour throughout the program. You know, we've been, we've been to Italy, right? So we've had a little taste of the food of Italy. Talking with Phil Wingo, we are going to be traveling the world in the name of barbecue, and then calling us directly from New Mexico, probably quite a bit warmer than it is here in Chicago. We've got the one and only Eileen Ogens joining us from TakingTheKids.com. Eileen, welcome back.
And by the way, it's not warmer here. It's I think it's about 20 degrees outside. And where we are in Gallup, it's over 6,000 feet above sea level. That's higher than Denver.
I don't feel so bad then, Eileen. You're roughing it. You're roughing it out there in the name of travel and family travel. Well, let's talk about it. We've got maybe 5-6 minutes, and so let's try to pick out a few different suggestions that you know are going to be great for families and travel. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, obviously Orlando, you know, the theme park capital of the world. What a lot of people don't know is they celebrate the holidays all November and all of December. And if you wait for Cyber Monday, you can get a really good deal that you could use either this year or all of next year. You can go to OrlandoTickets.com and you'll save an extra 10% off of already discounted theme park tickets. So we all know theme park tickets are the most expensive part of a trip to Orlando. So I think that's a good bet, whether you can make it for the holidays or sometime next year. And you could get the tickets, and then that could be a big holiday present for the kids, you know.
That's a great thing. I think even if you get a chance to open that, and you realize that you can use it, and it is, you think of it that you got to buy those tickets, and you're going to be able to use them maybe that weekend or during. But you really can. They do last the entire year, so I think that's a great thing to keep in mind. Where does Eileen Ogens go when it comes to Orlando? So many choices, but you're in on the on the know. Where do you go?
Well, you know, you always want to see what's new. The new Toy Story Land at Disney is really cool. I think, obviously, Harry Potter fans can't go wrong at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal. Universal's become its own kind of destination, you know, with more hotels and the parks expanding, you know. So I think, especially with older kids who really love coasters and Harry Potter, that can be really great. Younger kids, Legoland is a really good bet. So, you know, I think the thing about Orlando is you just have to try not to be overwhelmed and just remind yourselves that you can't see it all, right? And there's always going to be more to see and do, so just take in as much as you can and then go do something else.
So I think that's it, right? Get a plan, stick to it. You can come back another year and do that. So the next one, and we've got maybe like, I think, 3 minutes left. Would you say cruises? Would that be something that you'd...
Cruises are great for families, and they're especially great for multi-generational groups because there's something for everybody to do. You know in advance what everybody's paying. You don't have to be together every second. Everybody has their own space, and because there's so many wonderful activities for the kids, especially on lines like Carnival or Royal Caribbean, the adults will get some me time. So I think that's a really good bet. And there are a lot of ports near home, not so much in Chicago, but if you're meeting up with family members, you know, you can cruise from New York or New Jersey or Galveston or San Diego. So, you know, that can help defray the cost. And then also river cruises in Europe are increasingly becoming more family friendly. Uniworld has Generations cruises. AMA Waterways is partnered with Back Roads and Adventures by Disney. So, you know, if you are thinking about Europe, let's say, a river cruise can be a very pleasant way to go because it's totally all-inclusive. You know, the excursions, the activities, the drinks, it's all you know going in how much it's going to cost, and then you'll go to a lot of smaller places that might be easier to navigate than the biggest cities.
You know, it's one of those things, too, is like the cruise, a lot of people like that. You get to see a lot of the world, plus you've got that home base. If maybe you're not as comfortable, and especially if you got, you know, kids and stuff, you don't want to be, like, traveling from hotel to hotel, and, you know, you've got your home base of the ship that you can rely on as well. And so there's so many different things at takingthekids.com. And so, Eileen, before we let you go, I know we've got about 30 seconds left. If you want to kind of share the website and people can check it out and plan
sure.
their next vacation.
Takingthekids.com, and then also check out our new holiday light section. I'll be up in another week, and that's a great place to see where the brightest holiday displays will be all through the holidays. Make sure to check that out.
Eileen Ogan, she is there, takingthekids.com, and we're going to be talking with you a number of times before the end of the year for all those different travel opportunities through the holidays and all that kind of stuff. I can't wait, and I know the listeners are going to love it, too. So thanks, Eileen. Thanks for taking time out from your conference
anytime.
And jumping on. All right, we'll talk.
Okay, anytime. And follow our conference, you know, follow along what we're doing.
What's that hashtag again?
TMS Family Gallup.
We'll put that up at WGNradio.com. Thanks, Eileen.
Sure. Good night.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to send it to news. It's WGN Nightside, 720 WGN. WGN. It is WGN Nightside. Dane Neal here until 1 a.m. And we are traveling the world with family and food and all those things. A guy that was on with us a little bit earlier talking about the world of rubs and spices and flavorings and all those kind of things. Phil Wingo from Pork Mafia in studio now to bring kind of the travel side of things into the barbecue world. You know, it is, people have said that barbecue is like the true American kind of indigenous cuisine. Right. You know, we're a melting pot. And so we've got, especially here in Chicago, you can, you know, kind of spin the globe and any great cuisine from around the world, you can have it done at an elevated and a great way here in the Chicago area. But when you go around the country, barbecue is kind of America's food. And it's great to be able to kind of take it and share it with countries that that don't have it. And Phil is in studio. So, Phil, is that the kind of thing? You know, you think about this, and you look at it. Barbecue is one of those very rare foods that it's almost like a festive food, right? It's almost a celebration. People Correct. Celebrate with barbecue. People get married with barbecue. They, you know, they mourn with barbecue. It's just it's a party, you know, at all times.
It's a family event, backyard party. That's what it's about.
So the world's perception, and you have, you know, taken barbecue to places like, you know, Israel, the Netherlands, you know, a bunch of different places, England, right, maybe as well. And so a bunch of places around. What is their perception? How do they see barbecue?
So they're all cooking, learning to cook barbecue because they feel it's an American way, and they see the freedom of being cooking an item in your own backyard. And it's just growing in Europe, Israel, like wildfire. There are grill companies over there just nonstop sending grills by the trailer loads with people buying grills and cooking in the backyard
there. So it's like if we went back in a time machine back to when like a Weber kettle grill came out and it's like, yes. Look, you can do this in your backyard.
Yes.
And so you're able to see that, right? And go and see it all happening in places around the world where it hadn't happened before. That's got to be kind of exciting as a guy.
It's very exciting. So I have products in Europe. So being able to go to countries that are just getting started grilling, Lithuania is one of them. So being able to go...
Lithuania. Now, for the listeners out there, what is the typical... like, describe a few things. You know, Lithuania, what do they eat?
So it's mostly like Polish food.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Kind of a little bit of a heavier, you know, gravies and heavier items. But they're learning to cook barbecue there. And they are having restaurants opening that serve real good barbecue.
They're getting better, and I'll ask you in a second, you know, as far as like the level of expertise, you know, they can do. Barbecue seems like the kind of thing we've talked about it in the backyard. Everybody can get in there and do it to some extent, but the ones who really do it really well, you know, your top pit masters that make a living doing that, I mean, it's an art, right? And it takes almost it's a career, right? And it takes some real talent on the culinary side. I know that our good friend Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, he's been over to Grillstock, right? And they've yep. got that. He had said they're getting better, you know, they're learning from people like you. They're bringing in some of the not only the flavors, the spices, the techniques. I know I just got back maybe a week ago from getting a chance to judge the Jack Daniels Invitational, and they have all sorts of you know international teams coming in there, and they're getting better and better,
better and better. So there was just a contest this past weekend where a team from Germany won the big barbecue contest. And a few weeks before that, a team from England won the American Royal. So the European teams are getting better and better.
Is there been anyone, as a Myron Mixon, come up to you at some point and said, Phil, hey, come on, you got to keep it a little close to the vest. You can't be giving away all the secrets.
Well, to me, that's by sharing your knowledge is spreading the wealth of the barbecue family. And to me, that's not something that's worth keeping in. You have to let it out.
You know, Famous Dave, you know, he always says, and Stephen Reichlin as well, always says that there's this connection. There's something kind of ancient in the attraction to barbecue, whether it's, you know, man and fire and all that kind of stuff. And so there's like a common language, right, that everybody kind of gets.
Yeah.
And of course, there's different versions of barbecue that are all around the world as far as barbecue and grilling. But for some of these countries, and you mentioned Israel, you mentioned Lithuania, you're going to be heading to Australia in the near future. Like, which one has it been kind of the hardest? Is there like a common language in the barbecue world where you don't need to speak it to understand it? Or are there some places where you really do have to kind of put your teacher hat on and educate them?
Well, so everywhere that I've been, they've all spoke English, so it hasn't been too bad language barrier-wise. Even in Amsterdam area, they all speak English and love American barbecue. So that's why I got products over there through Netherlands, Finland, and a couple other smaller countries. Lithuania, I got product, but I have three flavors that are made over in Europe.
Is there like a billboard of Phil Wingo up in Lithuania on the highways? Here's your barbecue guy.
So the,
Not yet.
The Finland was working on a cardboard cutout.
Nice. Hey, you know you've made it when you've got the cardboard cutout. Well, it comes to barbecue. You talk about the events you can have in your backyard, and it's universal. But the great events, you know, like a Windy City Smokeout here. You mentioned some of those great competitions and all that kind of stuff. And Cochon 555 is an event that I've been involved with and judged Grand Cochon and been a part of, you know, basically since the beginning. I mean, I love it. It is like the premier heritage breed pork tour, right? They go from city to city, engaging chefs, starting that conversation. It's an important conversation. I think it's made a real impact. So the events are important. So talk a little bit about some of the events that you're building that that are going to do a similar thing in the way that they're going to be able to bring people in, kind of educate them in some ways, right? And certainly give them some great food.
So I've been involved in these boucheries that are coming about in a couple different states, and they're kind of from Louisiana. The Cajun people have done it this way. And where these boucheries, it's kind of a farm-to-table event. It is a full event where the animals are processed and everything right on the farm. And
I always tell people, even with Cochon, where they do, you know, butcher and larder, and they'll do like the butchering thing. It's like it's one half elevated culinary experience and one half like horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not for everybody.
So if that part of it's not for you, you just don't go early in the morning.
Look away.
So but it is some great food, and there's nothing like celebrating with heritage pork. It is the best flavor in the world for pork. And just getting to that knowledge out on how our grandparents did it, of how they process their animals at harvest time. So that's more or less what a boucherie is. It's a community effort where you can get involved and participate in the butchering, the processing, and the cooking of it.
And then what do you do as far as some of the, it's great to have some great beverages. Do you kind of build in some, it's always good to have some local stuff going on. Do you maybe some local like breweries
or wineries? There will be breweries involved, coffee involved in the morning. So yeah, everywhere we've done these events, Charleston, Lafayette, Louisiana, they've always had some local breweries come out in the mornings with the coffee for the breakfast items. But it's always about getting the local products as close as you can to where you're the farm that you're doing the event.
So for the listeners that are hearing you right now and thinking to themselves, Pork Mafia, I got to get some of the stuff that Phil is making and some of the stuff that is happening. Do you have to be, you know, a great pitmaster in order to get stuff or talk to you about it? Or
absolutely
do you have to be
not.
Someone in Israel or Australia somewhere? Can people get a hold of you?
Absolutely. The website's porkmafia.us. And I'm very easy to get a hold of.
And then social media wise too, I saw some of you mentioned some of that farm to table stuff. I saw some of the pictures that you had there. So you share a lot of the adventures that you have, whether they're here in the country or around the world. Social media wise, where can people go?
So social media wise on Instagram, Pitmaster Phil W, and Facebook is porkmafia.us also.
Phil Wingo, he is carrying the torch for barbecue, carrying it from here all around Chicago, obviously, to some of your favorite restaurants and pitmasters, and around the world as well, going to be heading to Australia. Thanks, Phil, for taking time, and thanks for your other Phil, Bring Phil Graff, for coming in with as well. Thanks, guys,
you.
For joining us and jumping on the air today.
Thank you very much.
All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. We lost an icon in the world of certainly comics, but the inspiration for so many of your favorite superheroes and superhero movies. Blake Stubbs is going to join us, so stay tuned. It is WGN Nightside 720, WGN. Nice tune, 720, WGN. It is WGN Nightside. Dane here with you until 1 a.m. And when it comes to, we had talked with him, and if you listen to the programs that we do on a regular basis when it comes to the world of movies and the cinematic experience, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs is our go-to guy, one of the very best in the business, joined us to talk about your favorite military movies, favorite war movies, and wow, so many different ones that people brought up and shared, and the background and the thought process and all those kind of things. And when it comes to, I think, a genre of filmmaking that is, at least in the modern day of the last, you know, handful of years, maybe 10 years or so, superhero movies have got to be right up there as far as ones that are kind of pushing the edge and the envelope on the technique and certainly on popularity. These are some of the biggest movies that are out. And Blake Stubbs is on the line with us. Blake, welcome to the show.
Hey there, guys. I would say good morning. Technically, we're in that morning, early morning phase now. But yes, good morning, good evening. It's good to be here.
Are you calling us from the home HQ of Peoria?
The HQ of Peoria, yes. That's where I'm at tonight.
Home of, it's Bradley University, right, is there, correct? Is that?
Correct.
Bradley,
yes, sir.
And also Big Al's is located there, which is, I think, a tourist attraction.
Also Big Al's.
Anyway.
Yeah, tourist attraction. That's what I would call it. Absolutely.
And the Richard Pryor Presidential Library is also in Peoria, I believe.
Yes.
And okay, so here's the thing, and you know, with a little bit of sadness, I think anybody, you know, if we talk to any of us at this point that are, you know, younger than 95, we would say we would sign up for that in a heartbeat, and to have a career where the things that you created, the inspirations for your artistic endeavors, you know, touched and entertained, you know, millions upon millions upon millions of people, and made a huge impact in the world of entertainment and film, and certainly comics. And I think everybody would sign up for Stan Lee's life, but it still doesn't make anybody feel better to have lost him at 95. And I think it's that opportunity now. Although I think, I don't know, I don't feel like we haven't been looking back, right? Because he's almost as busy, at least in the conversation, and as active now at 95 than he had ever been.
I would agree with you there. In fact, if you follow the history of Marvel Comics, Stan Lee had such a huge impact in creating so many different characters. In fact, I started to look into that. You know, I mean, a lot of people out there were probably like, oh, Stan Lee, you know, he's the guy that's in all the Marvel movies. For some, that may be the only way they know him. That's fine. And that's the thing. He has transcended just being a guy that, you know, created some comic book characters and wrote some comic books into being an icon. You said it before the break. I think icon is the word I would use. He believed in entertaining people and creating entertaining characters and stories, because there's some quote out there that I've seen circulating since his passing about how, you know, some people, you know, pursued careers in the medical field. Some became, you know, and found their calling. And his was to be really, and I'm paraphrasing it, but his was to be an entertainer. At first, as a writer and a story creator, and then later, you know, as a voice for, you know, people who, I think I've mentioned it before in talking with you, Dane, you know, being a nerd is cool now, but for a long time it wasn't. And I would say Stan Lee, though, was the tip of the spear in a lot of ways for making that cool. And for a lot of people, be it through his characters, his personality at conventions and talking to people and telling them to be themselves, or just, you know, being this entertaining character that we keep seeing in all the Marvel films. Because, you know, he had a hand in creating almost every one of the characters that you see on the big screen today.
The tip of the spear for the nerd movement, that is some high praise. This is the question that I wanted to ask, because you look at what he's doing now and the way that his, you know, kind of more than just kind of, it's a tremendous renaissance of his creativity built into all of these movies. And you know, when you see people that read the books and then they see the movie, they always say the book is way better than the movie, and that the movie, regardless of how good or maybe how big a hit it may have been, it never can, you know, keep up with what the experience might be on the literary side in the book form. It has, mm-hmm. For those people that are true, you know, aficionados, you know, of the comic book scene and everything that those are, is it similar to that? Is it where if the comic book is there, can you not enjoy the movie as much, or is it really, come on, it's, you know, it's pictures, right? And then you've got special effects that are amazing.
I would argue that when it comes down to it, comic books regardless of character or regardless of arc, or because a lot of them sort of overlap too with crossovers and everything, comic books have such a rabid following. And rabid, I don't mean to use in a negative way. I mean, people are very devoted to the characters and the spirit of every one of those stories and the growth that they've had from the very beginning when they are transitioned into the big screen. There have been occasions where it's not as well liked or loved. For the most part, though, I would argue that with, you know, Stan Lee's blessing, as we've seen, because he's taken part in a lot of these films, especially the Marvel Cinematic Universe under the helm of Disney and everything, they've managed to do some very solid work in bringing these characters to life on a big screen. I think a lot of that has to do with him giving them so much to work with, though. And not just him. I mean, that's the other thing about his work. If you go through, you know, the annals of Stan Lee's work, you know, you're looking at a lot of different collaborations, namely Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko. And these are, you know, the big characters that came from their work together was Spider-Man, the Hulk, Doctor Strange, Fantastic Four, which I would argue still hasn't had a decent cinematic treatment, yeah. But Daredevil, Black Panther, X-Men. I mean, you know, you go down the list and you're going to find some type of representation, both from book and from screen, that people typically like. And because they've written so many stories for these characters in book form, bringing them to life on a big screen, you know, if we have one particular actor playing a specific part and they only do it for a few films, like, say, in the case of Hugh Jackman, where he's played Wolverine, which is not a character Stan Lee created, but his label did usher it's fine, but at the same time, if a new actor takes it over with comic books, there's always some new story or some new take or some new iteration. And so comic books sort of have this malleability where you can change the character or you can change the look and the style for the big screen. So I would say it's kind of hand in hand. There's a very fluid relationship with it, more so than there is with books.
Here's the thing, too, is the, you know, you look at, and I think that the fact that the first one of, you know, Iron Man, right, that came out and it was such mm-hmm. a, yes. you know, Iron Man was, you know, now, of course, he's just a big star, but, you know, Iron Man was kind of like a D-list celebrity. He would have been on that, like, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out, or one of those, you know, Fight Club kind of things, or Big Brother House or something like that. He wasn't, right. you know, an A-list. This was not a Superman. This was not a Batman. You know, this was Iron Man. So to take him and then turn him into what has been, you know, obviously, you know, a huge and tremendous success. I think that and I want to get your thoughts on that as well. And I hopefully we'll have at least a couple minutes to have you do that right now. Is do you think that and the success that they were able to have with Iron Man allowed them to kind of dig through a lot of those more obscure characters and say, you know what, we can make a hit with almost any of these?
I would definitely agree with you there. And I would say that is the case strictly because Iron Man being the first in this Marvel Cinematic Universe that we now have come to know, and some have even come to say be fatigued by in some ways, just because we get them so frequently. Iron Man set the standard. It had a lot to go on, though. It wasn't just this random first ever comic book film, but it was the first in this iteration of comic book films. I mean, it had plenty to draw on from, you know, Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films. It also had a Tim Burton Batman, you know, franchise. It had the Chris Nolan, you know, era of Batman films to sort of compete against. If you think about it that way, Iron Man really sort of redefined how the Marvel label was going to be treated on the big screen. And it, you know, planted a lot of seeds. If you go back now and watch it, because, I mean, in my case, I hadn't revisited that film for a long time because it is 10 years old now, which is hard to believe, but it is. You can definitely see how it was a risk. It wasn't the biggest name that they could have chosen because they had already done sort of a Spider-Man take, but Spider-Man was owned by Sony and Disney had certain rights to certain characters. Iron Man was a good pick because of, you know, his riches and he can compete against like a Batman iteration. But also they could change it up and stylize it, and they found the actor who I think a lot of us can agree was born to play it, and Robert Downey Jr. Oh, yeah. playing Tony Stark. So, you know, if you're making the rap sheet and the list, and you're sort of picking, and you're 10 years ago, well, in this case, it was probably 12 years ago. I would argue that, you know, because of pre-production and everything, I would definitely say that it was a risk. I wouldn't say it was the biggest risk, but it was certainly one where if they had done it right, they knew they were off to the races. And I think, you know, history sort of told the tale.
We're talking with Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, and we're going to take a break. 312-981-7200. What is your favorite superhero movie? When we come back from this, we'll send it to news, and then we're going to spend at least one more segment with Blake, and we'll talk about his favorite superhero movies, and we'll also read off as many of yours as we can as well. 312-981-7200. So quick break. We'll be back. It's WGN Nightside, 720 WGN. See.
Babe, don't make a sound. 2 a.m. love, gotta keep it down.
Don't wait around for 720 WGN, WGN Nightside. Dane here with you until 1 a.m. And we are talking your favorite superhero movies of all time. The passing of Stan Lee, a guy that was a big part of the genesis of a lot of those characters that we know, love, appreciate, and enjoy on the big screen. He created them along with his team. There was a few other people involved, of course, at all times. He'd be the first one to tell you that, I would hope, and created them in the comic book form, and now they are some of the biggest stars in the world. Blake Stubbs is a big star when it comes to talking movies and cinematic experience, and certainly he is a big fan of superheroes and the movies that they make. Blake, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what are your favorites? Like, do you have a favorite, you know, superhero movie, you know, of all time? It doesn't necessarily have to be one that Stan Lee made, but if you do have one that he had, that would be great for you to weigh into.
It's very tough. I started to make kind of a short list, you know, like the ones I would always recommend people check out. I know that I gave a lot of praise to Black Panther, especially talking about it with you on the air here quite a while back when it came out, and that's very high on my list. It's also a Stan Lee collaborated character. It's one he helped create. Spider-Man 2. The original trilogy made by Sam Raimi of films that, you know, the third one kind of went way off the rails, but the second film is very enjoyable. Great villain, a lot of great visuals, and it was sort of when the director gets to collaborate, I think, with the studio very well, I think that's when you get to see some really great, you know, big budget, cool movies, and I would put that high on my list. Thor Ragnarok is another one, you know, just an incredibly funny and fun movie. It's a blast to watch. Also, Stan Lee. And then a couple that don't have Stan Lee affiliation. Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight is a big one. That's a tentpole superhero film for me. And then finally, I'm going to throw out another wild one. It's also a Sam Raimi film, but Darkman, which stars Liam Neeson as a man who gets sort of burned beyond recognition and sort of turns himself into sort of a hero of sorts, although there are drawbacks to it. And he gets burned beyond recognition and then starts to create synthetic skin so he can create masks and, you know, put himself in his enemy's shoes and infiltrate dark rings. It's a very out there film. And the reason why I bring it up is because Raimi always wanted to make a film of The Shadow, the classic radio hero. But he couldn't get the rights to it, so he created his own hero in Darkman. And it's this sort of oddball out there. If you watch that movie, it was made in the 90s, and then you turn around and watch the Spider-Man films, you kind of see why he was able to build Spider-Man the way he was. And I think modern comic book films, the ones that we're really enjoying now, we owe a lot to Sam Raimi and his team and their creative vision for bringing Spider-Man, Stan Lee's probably his biggest creation, to the big screen.
You're able to build a bunch of the different dimensions into him. I think that on the Marvel side, you know, with the Batman situation, you know, he was always kind of brooding and dark, and you were able to build kind of that sort of mental situation into the plot lines and the story. And on the Marvel side, like, they, and this is another thing I think, when you talk about how important that movie Iron Man was, and the perfection on casting, you know, with Robert Downey Jr., and you were able to have that humor side, right? Something that he could do. You know, he was like a funny, you know, witty, snarky, sarcastic kind of James Bond situation. I don't know too many people who could have done it and been as perfect for that, but that's something. You bring up Ragnarok, the funny side, surprisingly enough, whether they're at any end of the universe or the galaxy or the realms or whatever, is, you know, you're going to have some great creatures, some monsters, some battle scenes, but you're always going to have some jokes.
That's a big thing, I think, that permeates through a lot of Stan Lee's work, is that there was always good humor, good drama. It took you from both ends of the spectrum there, and it was able to put a good blend of that together. When they've done it in the films, I think, you know, with some characters, they've really hit bigger strides over the last few years, specifically Thor. I go with Thor Ragnarok. You know, that's the third film in a series. It's a reinvention of the character. I think it's more in spirit with the overall big picture of how the Avengers world is operating, and the transition that Thor, you know, goes through in that film makes sense. It's an evolution, and I think that that was always something big if you watch, because as I mentioned earlier before with comic books, you know, there's all these different writers taking over stories, and they're transitioning the books over time, and they're retconning this, and comic book readers can attest to this. You know, sometimes their favorite character is not their favorite character because they're not really a big fan of how a certain story arc is going. Well, that can always change. You know, after this series of books ends for this character, they come up with a new series and a new style and a new way to tell the story. And comic books are this ever-evolving method of keeping audiences engrossed. And I think the way they've transitioned it on the film side as well, it goes hand-in-hand with that. I think they've managed to finally bring those two things together. And a lot of that, again, coming back to Stan Lee, go look up a list of what he's created, and you're going to see like how big of an impact this guy had.
Well, and you think about this, too, is you've got the comic book side, and it's just like a book, you can write anything, right? And your imagination can imagine it. And the comic book, you can have people doing almost anything. And now I think, and as we let you go, I did want to get this thought too, is on the special effects side, just the capabilities that we have now in the technology side. When we come back from the break, we're gonna talk with Brian Nugent, who has been, you know, a part of special effects for Guardians of the Galaxies 1 and 2, Spider-Man 2, Batman versus Superman, Avengers, Age of Ultron, the Hobbit movies, Captain America, and all those kind of things. And I think part of it, you remember the old Sinbad movies, Blake, right, where it was kind of claymation and stuff,
the Ray Harryhausen method.
Where now you have the ability, and whether it's the technology and the talent of those artists and the tools that they have to really make those situations come to life.
Exactly. I think, and I know I've said this before, but I'm going to hit it home again, and maybe not even on WGN air, but I know I've said this before. We live in such a great time for visual artists and people who can create things that were never able to be created before, or the technology just wasn't there to match up with the brilliant minds that were out there. And now it seems like the technology is trying to catch up to everything again. Like we're I'm not saying we've plateaued or we've hit a pinnacle, but every time I'm going to the movies now for these big tentpole blockbuster films, I'm being more and more impressed every single time. And I like that. It keeps it fresh. It doesn't let it get stale. And I used to hear that a lot, where people were like, I'm tired of seeing CGI ever so much. And now a lot of directors are going back to making things practically, but they're blending in the use of visual effects and CGI in such a great way that it doesn't steal from performances. It doesn't draw us out of the experience of watching the movie. And I think that in the case of comic book films, there's no better platform right now to embrace the coolness and the imagination and the world building that can come with great visual effects.
Imagination and world building, it's Blake Stubbs. Those are the kind of things that he does on a regular basis. Blake, before we go to break, give your social media out so people continue this conversation, talk some movies with you.
Oh, absolutely. Find me on Twitter, @BlakeStubbs. That is the place. Love talking movies, so if you want to hit me up directly, feel free. And you know what? In honor of Stan Lee, we can geek out. I think that that's a natural order in times like this. So hit me up. Thanks for having me, Dane. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Blake. We'll talk to you soon. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have the one and only Brian Nugent on. He has been the movies that we have talked about, the movies, of course, that so many of us have enjoyed on the special effects side, the superhero side. He has been a part of the special effects for so many of those. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk with Brian when we come back from the break. It is Dane here on 720 WGN. WGN, it is WGN Nightside. Dane here till 1 a.m. with you, and we have been talking about Stan Lee, his impact, the mark he has had on so many of our entertainment situations, especially when it comes to the phenomenon of the superhero and when it comes to a superhero in the special effects world. Honored to have him on again, good friend and longtime guest here. He is a guy, and we mentioned it, he has been behind some of those great movies we have talked about over the years, whether it's X-Men, whether it's the Hobbit movies, Batman versus Superman, Avengers, Iron Man, even that original Iron Man that has kind of set the stage for so many of the great experiences on the superhero side. The one and only Brian Nugent from, he's got his new company, Breakaway. Brian, welcome back to WGN.
Thank you so much, Dane. It's good to be with you.
It is good to be with me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a crazy week here out in LA, but feels like things are starting to settle down a little bit, and everyone's trying to get back to life as usual, which just means traffic is insane, and we're all just trying to get by.
How can you, you know, and I don't know, here in Chicago, we were talking about it off the air with a number of the different guests, and of course, we all complain a little bit about, you know, the weather in the winter, and it's not great, but we don't have the natural disasters that have been, you know, whether it's hurricanes down in the Gulf, or certainly the fires that have been in and around California for the last couple years. I don't know how you guys even you keep everything straight. I don't even know how you go to work and do anything with all this happening all around you.
Yeah, it's been really crazy the past 2 years, especially. You know, this year's bad. It's getting a lot of attention, but it was last year, I don't know if people remember, but the images of the 405, which is our main kind of north-south freeway, was on fire. That had me cut off from the other half of the city. It was about a mile from where I live, so we literally had ash clouds raining down on us and everything else. This year, it's a little further north, so to me it doesn't feel as bad, but the reality is, you know, these fires are terrible. People are losing their lives, and everyone, you know, 150,000 people or so had to flee Malibu and just north of there, so it's been pretty bad.
Well, you remember that movie with John Cusack that was, you know, where it's like the end of the world and you see all those scenes. This is real life. So, but let's get into so Stan Lee, you know, an icon, right? Not many people can, I think, have that on their business card. And you look at all the things that he was involved with Marvel and the inspiration for characters. And we've mentioned a bunch of times, you know, promoting the fact that we were going to have Giannis. You worked in some of those, you know, so many of those movies that people know and love that he was involved with him, you know, as he passed, you any thoughts to that, you know, as far as, you know, being a part of what helped bring some of his, you know, amazing creations to life on the big screen?
It's definitely been a huge honor. I mean, I think that's the what better way to leave a legacy behind. But of course, you know, the comic books were huge for him throughout his entire life, but I'm proud that he could watch those characters come to life in a more cinematic sense. And I think that was something that definitely made him proud. Of course, he was starring in some fashion or another with a cameo in every movie that came out for the past 10, 12 years. So, you know, it was something I think that really excited him as someone who's gotten to work on it. You know, it doesn't get any better than that. Like you said, I remember working on the first Iron Man film when that was coming out, and it was, you know, very secretive and very hush-hush as far as what we were doing, and all of us were just so excited to get to be a part. But back then, no one knew, you know, we'd seen some other movies that were trying to break in to do the superhero kind of themed movie, and a lot of times they fell flat, so we didn't really know exactly what we were getting into at the time. And then, of course, it was a huge blockbuster. We realized that Marvel was doing it right, and it was going to be a new era, and it definitely was. And I think Stan Lee was proud. I know we were all proud to be a part of it. So it's been exciting.
Yeah, superhero movies don't define you. You've done all sorts of movies, part of that Oscar-winning team for The Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons, you know, actually making someone reverse the aging process. So that was quite a task. But I wanted to ask, and with Blake Stubbs, we talked a little bit about, you know, just the special effects process and the things that you do and have done and been a part of. And you mentioned you couldn't necessarily have known what a huge success or what it would lead to. But is it, you know, advancements in what it is that you do on the special effects side? Has that really made it possible for these movies to really be able to, I think, execute on the big screen the things that maybe the artists or the writers or the creators kind of dream up in their minds?
No, I think definitely. I mean, there really aren't any boundaries anymore. The what they call the uncanny valley is always the trickiest part, which is everyone's very familiar with that human face, those human emotions. So it can be very difficult to convince people that this CG character is truly human and feel that depth, feel the soul. And that's something that's really gotten a lot better in the past 5 to 8 years. And even, some of my favorite work that's ever been done is Planet of the Apes. I mean, just look at as those movies have progressed through the three films, you can just feel that realism. You can feel the depth, and it's easy to forget that those are CG characters and not, real life monkeys that they've somehow trained to act and talk. It's definitely pushing the boundaries, and it's made a huge difference. And because of that, there really isn't anything that can't be achieved anymore. Now it always comes down to how much is it going to cost or how long is it going to take. But, you know, it used to be if you had a 500 shot visual effects movie, that was a huge movie. Now it's 2,000, 2,200 shots in a visual effects movie on a, more and more regular basis. And that's, from just when I started out, those are insane numbers. So it's made a huge, huge leaps in what we've seen in the abilities to kind of turn things around and really cross that gap of what feels real to the people who are watching those movies.
You think what you had to work with in the past, like an animatronic, monkey or gorilla and things. And when you look now, of course, we're so spoiled now, you look back at some of those movies and you almost can't watch them. You're just like, oh, come on. That's crazy. Even though at the time everyone was blown away. You mentioned, the face, is it real and all that kind of stuff. And you got Paul Walker in that unfortunate situation. Then you had, Carrie Fisher being built into one of the Star Wars movies. In your opinion, as technology has gone on and you're able to do more with the talent, adding in, kind of extra levels of kind of the technology and the tools, is there going to be a time where, where we don't even, I don't want to say we don't need actors, obviously we do, but where you can just have people that aren't real, right? CGI people in movies as stars.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's happening probably more than people almost realize it already. It's subtle, but a lot of the actors that we see that we are enamored by when they're doing the various stunt scenes or whatever else, a lot of that screen time is carried out by CG body doubles. They might be stunt people that we've done face replacements on, so it's CG replacements, or you may be shooting an actor on a green screen and then taking that face and putting it over top of a double if you need to. So that stuff is happening throughout. It's just, as that technology gets better, you're going to have less need to be paying, these big name actors to do every little bit. You're going to probably have people's favorite. Right now, it might be a favorite cartoon character or Elsa from, some of the Disney movies or something else, but it'll probably be a CG, real life feeling human character that we think of as being, a real person when they're nothing more than just an animated character that whatever studio has come up with and turned into the next big hit. So,
well, if the listeners know, we're talking with Brian Nugent, one of the top special effects artists in the industry. The list of movies, especially the superhero movies we're kind of featuring and focusing on, is extensive. It is a who's who. It is a team photo of awesome and work with some of the best and brightest in the industry. And now we've got maybe like a minute or so, Brian, but you've got your own company, Breakaway. Let the listeners know a little bit about, what that is, what you're doing as you're kind of forging out on your own with your own situation.
That's right. Yeah. So I started Breakaway Post with a fellow business partner of mine. He and I started out together working for the company, doing a lot of that de-aging, the Benjamin Button and everything else. And so now we're a commercial shop. We do a lot of commercial work for Toyota, Subaru, kind of all the big car companies. We've worked on the Hereditary movie and got some exciting stuff coming up through the holidays as everyone ramps up. We're on set this weekend for a Sherry's Berries project. So we're always trying to innovate and kind of do fun stuff. And we've been really excited to getting on some of those big clients and those big projects ourselves. So the best part of being in control of that is you get to have a more active role. You're always getting to be creative and guide the process from beginning to end. So it's been a lot of fun getting to kind of transition over into that more of a driver's seat role over the past 2 years.
I knew it. I knew that those sherry berries were too delicious looking, that it had to be CGI. CGI deliciousness.
That's right.
So, Brian, we'll have a link up at WGNradio.com and everything, but if you want to give the website out for Breakaway and or social media or any way people can kind of keep up with your adventures, go ahead.
Absolutely, yeah. You can check us out at www.breakaway-la.com. Check out the website. You can see some of the work we're up to, and you know, we're always happy to talk to anyone who's interested in trying to get some productions done.
We love what you're doing. Thanks for taking time out. I know it's a tough time over there as far as, you know, everything that's happening in California, plus, you know, you've got stuff to do. So I appreciate you jumping on and jumping on the show tonight.
You bet. Thank you, Dane. Take care.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to send it to news. It is Nightside with Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN Nightside, wrapping things up here. I want to thank everybody that listened to the show. Thanks to everybody who participated.